What are you even worried about? It's Worry Week on The Wire.
It is indeed Worry Week on The Wire. We've missed a few of the last ones. However, we are back with this one. So intermittently on the show, we have a theme for the week, as I'm sure most of the listeners are aware. This week's theme for Worry Week is War, Imperialism, and the Military-Industrial Complex, which is a very, very big topic. Initially, I was going to relate the report that I was attempting to compile on Sudan to this topic. However, I have decided not to, and I've decided not to rush the report on Sudan, which I was compiling, and save it for a later date. However, so instead, I have talked to Auckland Peace Action, an organization obviously based in Tamaki Makaurau, as the name suggests, being active, as the name suggests, about peace, as the name suggests. About their upcoming picnic for peace, what that is and what it is reflective of. And so that last part referring to why, how it's come about and New Zealand's past and how the picnic for peace is reflective of New Zealand Aotearoa's relationship with war, imperialism, and the military-industrial complex. I spoke to Val Morse, who is one of the leaders of APA, and I started by asking what she thought and what Auckland Peace Action thought the mainstream perception of Anzac Day was.
I think the mainstream perception of Anzac Day is as a day to commemorate war dead from New Zealand and Australia in particular. And I think that the primary issue that we take, I think, with Anzac Day as it is currently commemorated in New Zealand is that that is a relatively superficial narrative that is promulgated about New Zealand's participation in the First World War. And following on from that, that war is actually used to kind of coat all wars, including New Zealand's current wars, with a kind of veneer of honor and bravery and courage that really don't actually reflect what war is about.
Right. So how would you or Auckland Peace Action frame Anzac Day?
Well, I think that's a very good question, and whether or not Anzac Day in particular would, in the peace movement, would be a day that we would be, in fact, continuing to ideally mark as a particular day, I think is a question in and of itself. Because if what we want to do is talk about peace and peacemaking, rather than necessarily marking these particular days in war, and I think that that's one of the interesting things, is that war is seen as a very active process. It's almost the most active thing that the human mind can imagine, whereas peace is sort of seen as this passive state of things. And for us, we'd like to transform that idea of peace into something that is very active, something that we do all the time, every day. And so I think commemorations around war dead are very, very important. But I think as well that we need to think about why and when those days that we're marking are in fact those days. So, I mean, Anzac Day is a significant day for reasons of history and because of the huge loss of life for New Zealand. But I think in the wider scope of the war, many war historians would say, you know, New Zealand actually lost more troops on the battlefront in Passchendaele. You know, we hardly mark that at all. People would be hard-pressed to say what day of the year those battles took place on. So, you know, I think it's a really interesting conversation to have about how, when, and why we mark particular battles.
What would you say our military history says about Aotearoa?
Well, I think that's a very good question. Again, it's like, who's doing the telling of that military history? So there's been a conversation that's just really occurred in the last couple of years that has said, why aren't we acknowledging and commemorating the New Zealand wars, the wars that happened on this soil, on this whenua, in the same way that we acknowledge the wars that happened and New Zealand participated in overseas? And so I think that as a starting point is a question that really needs some much greater examination. So there's been millions, literally over the last 4 years, about $25 million put into commemorating the First World War stuff. But the commemorations of the New Zealand Wars, a day that's marked on the 28th of October now, scarcely received $1 million worth of funding. So I think in terms of talking about New Zealand's war history, that's a real disparity in public understanding and the kind of acknowledgement of the scale of that that horror for what it means actually for us as a country going forward. And so I think that there's a lot of questions about who's doing the telling of history, because often New Zealand is portrayed as a sort of not very dangerous, but often courageous adversary in war. And so that perception goes on through the First World War, the Second World War in Vietnam, and on to today, where people talk about places like Iraq and Afghanistan. And our contributions, for example, in Afghanistan are not well understood by the public. And so we're seen as peacekeepers, we're seen as people there doing reconstruction, when in fact the reality is mostly what New Zealand has been doing in Afghanistan is upholding the U.S. occupation of Afghanistan. It has been helping with Special Air Service troops, with SAS troops on the ground, directing and leading combat missions in Afghanistan, detaining prisoners. And as we see out of the Operation Burnham inquiry, they are actually involved in murdering people and taking prisoners. So this is really serious stuff that we're talking about. And we can't really afford to allow ourselves to dwell on these illusions about New Zealand's current military deployments or our historical deployments.
Yeah, I was going to ask what the current state of the military of New Zealand is, but you've kind of covered that well. So what would you say that we still need a military, and what do you say to those who maintain that we do if you believe that we don't?
Well, I guess what I'd say is the New Zealand Defence Force itself is very clear that New Zealand faces no actual military threat to the territorial integrity of New Zealand. And they have said that over many, many, many years, right? So New Zealand is not a country that is likely or even sort of unlikely to be invaded by foreign troops. So when you then talk about what the necessity of the military is, the necessity of the military arguments go towards things like the quote-unquote international order. So New Zealand often participates in wars overseas, like the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, under the pretense that these are about protecting the international rules-based order of things. What we in the peace movement would say is that actually those wars are wars of empire to prop up essentially U.S. troops and U.S. military, that are wars of conquest for resources, wars for oil, wars for access to strategic transport routes, and wars of domination, so that they really don't have very much to do with the national security of New Zealand. From the perspective of New Zealand's territorial integrity, I myself am not a pacifist. Auckland Peace Action is not an exclusively pacifist organization. And, you know, I think that the possibilities for civil defense of New Zealand, should that ever become necessary, might be a possibility. But I think as it's currently constituted, the New Zealand military does not represent really what New Zealand actually needs. And in fact, what it does do in many cases are things that most New Zealanders probably really don't agree with.
You brought up wars of empire. How important is demilitarization to decolonization in that kind of interrelationship?
Well, I think demilitarization and decolonization are linked, right? Because if we look at the history, again, of Aotearoa New Zealand, the military and the police were both instrumental in the subjugation and pacification of Māori in Aotearoa. So the military and the police here have routinely throughout New Zealand history been used against the indigenous people of this country. Now, it's very interesting because, of course, the military and the police have a disproportionately high level of Māori in those services. And it's one of the few areas in New Zealand society where I think Māori can achieve a degree of equality, actually. And so I think that there's a lot of soul searching that needs to be done in this country around, obviously, issues of decolonization and racism in terms of how we want to be as a nation going forward. But I think if we continue to have a military and have a presence of waging war and occupying countries and other places and subjugating other indigenous people, then I think that there can never be any real justice here at home either, because those things are very, very much interlinked. And the use of the police and the military against Māori, disproportionately, again, will continue to be a feature of life here. So I think it's a kind of a complex, quite a complex relationship, but one that we certainly need to begin to untangle. And one of the other things I'd like to say about, you know, kind of about the New Zealand military and about the perception of the New Zealand military is that the New Zealand military does a very good job of selling to the New Zealand public the ideas that what it is engaged in are peacekeeping, disaster relief, search and rescue kind of stuff. And in fact, it does do those things. And New Zealanders are proud that the military does those good things. And if that was all the military did, then that would in fact probably be services that are very necessary in New Zealand. But the other part of what the military does are counterinsurgency operations and special forces deployments, which are things that, and in fact, those are the primary things that they do, and those are the primary things that they train for. So I think it's interesting that the perception of the New Zealand Defence Force and the reality of them are actually quite different, and that is a deliberate public relations strategy by the military to do that. So I think that those are some of the interesting issues and kind of contradictions that we face around trying to undo the military industrial complex.
Oh, I've got one final question. So coming up on Thursday is, of course, Anzac Day, and APA, among other people, are hosting the Picnic for Peace. What is the Picnic for Peace and what is its aim?
The Picnic for Peace really for us is an alternative Anzac Day event. It's happening at 12 noon at the Auckland Band Rotunda, the Auckland Domain Band Rotunda. So everybody's invited to come along to enjoy some food. And we've got some speakers coming along. And really for us, it's about commemorating all of the victims of war. So not just soldiers, but civilians, for aid workers, for people who die in war, and to commemorate really people who resisted going to war. So New Zealand has a very proud and long history of resistance to war. In the First World War, there were people that resisted and refused conscription and who were imprisoned. Some of them were sent to the front, to the Western Front. So many people would have heard of Archibald Baxter. He was sent to the Western Front in France. He was tied to a post in what's called Field Punishment Number 1 while he was being shelled with live shells by the Germans. So he was effectively tortured along with a number of other soldiers for refusing to go to war. Many of them spent up to 10 years in prison and were denied their civil rights well after the war ended. So partly for us, it's about commemorating people who have the courage to resist war. And if anybody thinks that it doesn't take courage to resist the war, then I encourage you to read Archibald Baxter's We Shall Not Cease. Because it is a testament to human endurance and to human courage in the face of overwhelming horror and just unmitigated violence.
Worry Week on The Wire.